First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Hey everyone, so today's episode is a little different. You may have seen on Instagram that I have decided to delay our start of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban in order to make space for something more important. With everything going on in our country currently, I thought it would be best to have an episode to discuss race and injustice within the Harry Potter series. I think many people, like myself, are realizing that we have not done enough to be an ally to people of color, and that it is no longer the time to brush off having difficult discussions because it's, you know, the polite thing to do and you don't want to make people uncomfortable. It's time to make people feel uncomfortable and to use your voice to call out racist behavior when you see it, even if it's a member of your own family. So today I have two guests on with me to discuss racism and injustice where we see it in Harry Potter, and how we can use Harry Potter as a tool to begin to have these difficult but absolutely necessary discussions with our children, our families, and our loved ones. This episode is not going to be spoiler-free, so if you are a new reader to Harry Potter, please listen at your own risk. I know this is usually geared toward first-time readers of the books, but we also have already established Potter fans in our audience, as well as people who may not care about being spoiled or already know what happens. And it's impossible to have a spoiler-free discussion about this. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm very grateful for my guests for helping me have this discussion. I hope you learn a lot and take the steps to have these conversations with your children as you read the books with them or with your friends and family. Also, I want to put a trigger warning here. The topic of sexual assault does come up later on in the podcast, and some terminology around sexual assault is used. So I want to warn everybody about that, and I will put the specific time of that in the show notes so you can skip over it when the time comes. All right, so welcome to episode 14 of First Years. This episode is going to be a little different than usual. This week's episode is going over where we see racism and injustice in the Harry Potter series, unpacking it, and how we can go forward and discuss these themes and ideas with our children, our friends, and our family members. I have two guests with me today who are helping me have this discussion. So why don't each of you introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about you and your Hogwarts house, if you know it.
I can go first. My name is Rachel. Hogwarts house is Slytherin. I live in Los Angeles, California. And I started reading Harry Potter when I was 10 years old, like when it first came out. And I'm 27 now, so 17 years ago.
My name is Mustafa. I'm in Canada right now. I don't know my Hogwarts house. I first read Harry Potter. I think I'm probably a year younger than you, Rachel. I read it when around when the third book came out is when I started reading it. I remember getting it from the library and everything.
That's awesome. I can't remember reading the first book, but the earliest book I remember reading was Prisoner of Azkaban. And I remember seeing Chamber of Secrets in theaters, but I can't really remember anything before that. But I also don't remember, like, Harry Potter not existing in my life at one point. So I'm super glad that you guys are here. And so why don't we jump right into it? So this book series, I would argue, is all about standing up to injustice and fighting for what's right. And we see several instances of racism and injustice within this series. And I'd like to look at them, unpack them, relate them to what's going on in our world today, and see how we can use this as a tool to begin to have these discussions about racism with others. So the main ones that I wrote down to discuss, and I'm sure as we discuss, we'll think of more, are blood purity, house elves, Remus Lupin, the judicial system, and Azkaban. So why don't we start with the biggest one and the most obvious one, which would be blood purity. That's the biggest form of racism that we see in Harry Potter, with everyone caring about your blood status and the purebloods thinking that they are greater than everybody else because they have the purest family lines. We see the Sacred 28, you know, like the Malfoys, the Black family, the Lestranges. And we see a lot of different characters sort of use this vocabulary around blood. Like we even see Hagrid be like, oh, it's bad blood. And we even see within Slytherin House, most of the members of Slytherin House are purebloods and they hold these beliefs. And Slytherin has a chamber that has a monster that is literally supposed to be used to purge the school of those who would be considered unworthy to study magic because of their blood status. So let's unpack that a little bit. Like, where does Ron fall into this as a pureblood wizard? Where does Draco fit into this with his transition in the series? Let's talk about that a little bit.
I think Ron's an interesting character because him and Draco are so alike in the sense that they're both like quote unquote pureblood, but how they operate in the world is completely different. Completely. And I guess, I mean, obviously that's a product of their parents. So I guess it's really not their fault. Ron's only a good person because his parents are good people. And same thing with Draco. He's kind of a jerk because his parents teach him to be a jerk.
Also, apart from Draco and Ron, in the fourth book, if you guys remember, at the end, when Fudge and Dumbledore are having their argument over whether or not Voldemort's back, so... one of Fudge's issues is that Barty Crouch Jr., he's from one of the oldest and purest wizarding families ever. And Dumbledore accuses him that if you hold blood so high and yet you've gone and killed one of these people, one of the purest purebloods, basically. And at that point as well, you see how big a deal it is to Fudge, who is the minister, for someone to be pureblood. He can be accepting of people who aren't pureblood, yes. But deep down, he does definitely hold, like, your blood status. Like, it's very important to him.
Definitely. And I think we see, you know, that purebloods do have a higher status within the wizarding society in general. And, you know, I think it's absolutely right to talk about how Ron is a better person than Draco is because his family has instilled, like, certain beliefs within him. But I think we also see a certain amount of privilege in Ron, and in Chamber of Secrets when Ron is explaining what a squib is, when they find out that Filch is a squib, he kind of laughs about it. And
yeah it's really sad too, because I don't think, well, in terms of Harry Potter paralleling real life, I think that's a common problem when people don't realize just because they're quote-unquote the good guys, it doesn't mean they're necessarily right. And the Weasleys live at the space of, yes, they are very privileged because they live, well, no, they're not actually technically privileged. They're very poor, especially in the wizarding world. They're very, very poor. So in that sense, they're technically not privileged, but they are because they're purebloods. But it tells you that being pureblood doesn't change your circumstances. It just means you're treated better, which is sad because the guy who was all crazy, Voldemort, wasn't even himself a pureblood. He had a father who was a muggle.
Right, and I was going to bring that up. I had that in my notes. Sort of relating Voldemort and Snape to almost being a parallel to being white passing, you know, like...
Yeah.
Where, you know, if we look at the definition of, like, racial passing, like, it says, like, when a person is classified as a member of one racial group is accepted as a member of another... Historically, the term has been used primarily in the U.S. to describe a person of color or of multiracial ancestry who assimilated into the white majority to escape the legal and social conventions of racial segregation and discrimination. So both Snape and Voldemort are not purebloods, but they have, they're in like the club of purebloods, right? These purebloods, which are most of the Death Eaters, are members of the Sacred 28 families, right, are being led by someone who is a half-blood. And Snape also has a high standing within that group as a half-blood. So it's almost like if you can be one of us in belief system, if your beliefs are similar enough to ours, you can be part of the group even if you're technically not.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because if they cared about bloodlines the way they said they do, they wouldn't have killed Neville Longbottom's parents. I didn't even realize until recently, I forgot Neville's ancestry, that he's Harry Potter, just not chosen. That's the only difference. Right. He didn't get a scar. He got dead parents and no glory. And I was like, no one, Neville kind of gets swept under the rug for that. But he's technically a pureblood, and yet his parents are dead at the hands of people who celebrate purebloods.
Yeah, it's just more about how you how culturally similar you are, because Snape and Voldemort were both very culturally similar to any of the other Death Eaters. And for me, even more than just pure blood, the bigger issue, and this was something that I actually didn't like about Harry Potter, was that the house sorting, actually, more than just the blood itself. Because blood, yes, in society, but you saw good pure bloods, you saw bad pure bloods, and the same with half bloods as well as muggle borns. When you were getting sorted into houses, then it was essentially, how do I put this? A lot of Rowling's characters, more significantly Harry and Voldemort themselves, they're basically born either good or evil. Voldemort was born evil, and we know why she made him born evil, right? Because of the love potion. Voldemort was born evil, so no matter what he did, that's going to be evil. He's destined to be evil. Harry Potter could use unforgivable curses, do whatever, but just because he's supposed to be good, he's born good, anything he does is automatically good. So that was, I felt like, in the same way the sorting hat was also propagating that problem a lot. And in that way, like, she was contradicting what she was saying about blood types, because she's talking about how thinking the pure bloods are superior is not a good thing, holding that ideology is bad, but at the same time, you're either born absolute good, absolute evil, you're born in this way, and that justifies your actions.
That's- yeah, and I think, you know, I've talked about house biases before on this podcast, and it's something that, like, I feel really passionately about, because, you know, we see very early on that other people's opinions of certain houses inform Harry's opinions on them before he even gets to Hogwarts, you know, where Gryffindor's put on this pedestal, and, like, Hufflepuff's just like, and, like, Ravenclaw, you're, like, super smart, and, like, Ravenclaw, you, like, or Slytherin, you have to be evil, essentially. And I think it's just such a disservice almost to Slytherin House to not have a real example of someone in Harry's generation who is a good Slytherin, you know, and I would almost argue that Harry, had he been sorted into Slytherin, had he not known to ask to not be in Slytherin, probably would have been that example of a good Slytherin. But I can't blame, you know, the rivalries that are in Hogwarts, because everyone we do meet from Slytherin House mostly are racist and classist. So obviously, you know, you are going to go against those people. Like, the only, I think, you know, there might be an argument to be made about Slughorn, but Draco is really the person that we see sort of start to transition out of that belief system, right? So I'm wondering where he fits into this, because we see him go from someone who believes and recites this, like, culture and belief system that his family has, that he has been told probably since he was born, to someone who over time realizes the consequences of his actions. And he does end up marrying someone who, although is a pureblood, is a little bit more progressive in a way. But I'm almost wondering, like, are his motives, like, is he actually someone who makes the transition into, like, becoming a better person, or is it more of, like, selfish because he doesn't start to care about what he's doing and what he has been saying until his own life and his family's lives are threatened?
But then
I think it's okay that his life is threatened to make him come to that, because sometimes people need major wake-up calls to the horrible things they're actually doing. And I think before, his hatred for Harry and Hermione was kind of, like, fun, and that's parallel to real life. People who are kids who do racist, insensitive things don't realize what they're doing. They don't realize that that little racist remark is actually a horrible thing that you're doing. It's really terrible. And it's not until it's life or death and you realize that the group that you're aligning yourself with is very serious. And that when it's life and death, you realize, oh my God, like, this is not what I signed up for. I didn't sign up to be a murderer. Draco might be a jerk, but he's not a killer. And we see that. He's not a killer. He couldn't do it. He couldn't kill Dumbledore.
He couldn't kill Dumbledore, and he was disillusioned. What you're saying, I think you're right, Rachel, because just look at the US today. Now, you've known that this has been happening for decades, centuries actually, but at least for the past few decades, the racial injustice. everyone knows what the police have been doing for a long time. But it wasn't until something as you've seen videos of other black people being killed, but this one had something different. It was so extreme that no one was able to ignore it this time, right? So you do need a shock sometimes to come out of a deeply like held system, right? That's the same thing that's happening in the US. You were shocked by George Floyd's murder more than by any of the others you've seen before. That's when you finally spoke out against all of this racial injustice.
I think so, kind of only, but I mean, for some people, I think the George Floyd is shocking and new. I think for some of us, it was like, yeah, we've been saying this. I live in Los Angeles. I'm half black, half Mexican. I keep telling people, like, Rodney King got beat in 91. That was before I was born. And now it's 2020, and George Floyd got his neck stood on. I think it's actually, ironically enough, a Harry Potter reference will put this into me for frame. Dolores Umbridge. She's a figure in the series that's supposed to be in charge of these children, and yet we witness her torture Harry Potter. I don't care what the kid did. You don't torture a child. But you're not going to, no one's going to believe Harry. No one's going to believe that this figure that you're supposed to trust and be protected by is the one hurting you. So people in America and people in this country don't realize that the police are in position of power and they use that power and abuse it. But it's hard to believe because it's not supposed to happen. Dolores Umbridge isn't supposed to be the person torturing you. She's supposed to be the person protecting you. But that's not the world we live in.
That's a really good point. I would not have thought to make that connection. And I think that really does put it in perspective in a really good way. And I think, you know, that's part of the reason why I wanted to have this discussion, because, you know, making that connection when, you know, we're talking to someone, to like a child or a family member or a friend who might not fully understand everything that's going on in the real world, but can absolutely relate that to Harry Potter. It sort of puts it in perspective and uses it as a tool to lead into those bigger discussions.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
So going along with Pure Bloods that we were talking about earlier, I think the next thing to talk about would be house elves, because they are intimately connected with pureblood families because they come with old castles and manors, which means they're usually owned by pureblood families who are the ones who have the old family houses and are wealthy enough to own castles and manors. So house elves are essentially slaves in their position in the world. And they are based off of like a house spirit who takes up residence in human farms, and they bring prosperity. And if they leave in anger, the farm or the house goes into ruin. So there's a reliance on them to keep the house and the farm going. You know, if we look back at like folklore and stuff, and in their folklore, this detail of them leaving if they were given clothes is actually present. But we see that house elves, they do basically anything that needs to be done, all of the household chores, the cooking, whatever, with no compensation of any kind. And I'm sure there are differences in treatment from family to family, but they're still working for free. They're not allowed to have wands. They're considered lesser than. We do see examples of good relationships with, you know, like Regulus and Creature, but there's like no laws regarding standards to meet with your house elf about like treatment or living conditions or anything like that. And we also see that like they want to be in this position, and it is, you know, at least for the ones who I guess aren't mistreated, they find it insulting that someone would want to give them clothing.
Which is very sad.
If you guys will remember, I'm guessing you guys are Americans, you'll have read more of your own history than me. But in the 1860s and before, with the Underground Railroad and all of that stuff, and then the war, the Civil War, a lot of black people in the South didn't want to be freed. They were like, meaning because you're not used to it, right? It's been ingrained in you that what are you going to do apart from this? This is what you're supposed to do. This is your lot in life. It's like a lot of women won't want suffrage, let's say, because that's all they're used to, right? So I think the house elves are the same way. why should we be free? This is what we're supposed to do. This is our lot in life. What can we do outside of this? So I feel like that's one thing. And apart from that, Hermione tried to take up the cause, and we all know that she's just completely made fun of until like the end of the seventh book for that.
I think it's because Hermione is the only person who didn't grow up with that. She's muggle-born, so everything she knows from the wizarding world, it's new. It's very new. So she's the only one who questions, like, these house elves, why are they working for free? Why are they treated so horribly? And I think it's easy to compare them to slaves in the South in that time, but I think history is often unkind to African Americans who were enslaved in the United States, because it's a character type to believe that they wanted to be slaves. There were rebellions and there were attempts to overthrow. And I think that's present in the Harry Potter universe, because Dobby risked his life to go warn Harry Potter. And you think, why would this little house elf leave and risk everything to save this one kid? And it's because when Voldemort rose up, things got really bad. And when Harry Potter defeated him as a baby, things got better. So I think it's ingrained in their minds to, as little house, like little elves as slaves, to maybe stay the status quo, because if you challenge it, things might get worse, which is true. And that happened in real life in the United States. Every time the status quo was challenged, things got worse. Every time progress was made, it was torn back down. And even a famous slave rebellion that's, I don't think it's honestly taught in schools, is Nat Turner. The slave escaped. He escaped from the South, had a vision, went back into slavery because he thought it was his goal, his belief, to kill every white Southern there. And that's what they did. They killed everyone, and babies included. And after that, things got worse. That's when reading became illegal. So I think the same things with the house elves. It's not that they don't want to be free. It's just that right now, we're okay. And if we challenge this okay, things could get worse. They might get better, but in experience, they don't. That's how I look at the elves.
Mm-hmm. And if we look at Hermione's efforts through Spew, you know, we do see that other wizards don't take her seriously. They insist that the house elves are happy where they are, doing what they're doing. And I'm wondering, you know, Hermione being an activist, if she goes about, if we can argue whether or not she goes about things the correct way. You know, she goes like around hiding clothing in the Gryffindor common room so that house elves who don't know that they are about to pick up clothing will go to pick up clothing and be free. And it gets to the point where no house elf besides Dobby will even touch the Gryffindor common room because they are afraid of picking up this clothing that Hermione is leaving around. Is that Hermione going about things her own way without learning about this situation? Is it her trying to be like almost a savior figure in this situation?
I get what you're saying. She doesn't take into account what they actually want. She just assumes, because her belief system operates like that, that their belief system will operate like that. That's not necessarily the case, because they're resisting. They're not taking the clothes. They don't want money. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like she might be overstepping her boundaries a little.
Yeah, it might not be a question that has a specific answer. I think it's just something to think about in regards to her actions with all of this stuff, because she seems to be the only one who cares enough to even, you know, learn how to knit hats or anything for these house elves. Everyone's like, no, you're crazy. Like, what are you doing?
But Hermione, at least, I think, Rachel, you just said it, right? That she wasn't born with all of that, right? She was raised in a Muggle household. So so was Harry. Harry was raised, and that's one of the biggest problems with Harry, that unless it's directly like he has a vested interest in something, he does not care about the moral issue or any sort of impact like that. He cares about Voldemort. He cares about the pure blood issue because he wants revenge for his parents. He cares about house elves, where it'll help him. He cares about all of this stuff only there. Otherwise, he's basically morally ambiguous. Like, whatever is going on, let it go on. That's basically Harry's attitude throughout the series. And J.K. Rowling is basically a New Labour, right? She's a huge New Labour supporter, like Tony Blair and all of those people.
Yeah.
so which was basically conservative light. Anything they do is either for their own benefit or it's performative. And Harry was the exact same way. He treated creature nicely because it was for his own benefit. He was against purebloods because for his own sake. And like that's probably the biggest issue with Harry as a person in the series. Hermione and Harry was raised basically in the same way, but Hermione was morally, like, we can say she was morally on the right path with house elves, whether her approach was mistaken or not. Harry didn't really care if it didn't affect him.
I think it's because they are treated differently within the magic world. Hermione, who's obviously this brilliant witch, is not respected because her parents are muggle. And the audacity to care about that, it's like, it's crazy. Like, this girl's brilliant. Why does that even matter? And she has to put up with that literally the entire series of being called these horrible names. And on top of having to put up with it, it's in the series itself, it's actually never reconciled. They never actually challenge the fact that they use the term muggle or mudblood or any of those things, because it's just a sentiment they all agree on, that muggles are bad. Whether we kill them or not, that's up for debate. Some people think that it should be purified, and some people think, like, no, leave them alone. But they both agree that they're above them. And Hermione has to live in a world where everyone thinks that they are better than her when they're really not.
Going along with that, we see another instance of injustice and discrimination is through Remus Lupin, who is unable to find or keep a job due to him being a werewolf, even though he is a very qualified wizard and was an incredible teacher. He has to resign as soon as Snape lets it slip that Remus is a werewolf. And I was looking through Fantastic Beasts today, and when you read about the being versus beast classification debate that they had between the 14th and the 19th century, Newt does talk about werewolves. So it says, quote, "Werewolves, meanwhile, have been shunted between the beast and being divisions for many years. At the time of writing, there is an office for werewolf support services at the being division, whereas the werewolf registry and werewolf capture unit fall under the beast division," unquote. And what's really fucked up about this is that being classified as a being is what gives you your rights. He writes that, quote, "a creature worthy of legal rights and a voice in the governance of the magical world." That is the classification. Like, if you are classified as a being, you have legal rights and a voice in the governance of the magical world. So even though werewolves are humans 353 days of the year, their transformations once a month still potentially take their rights away. And we see this even in a time where the Wolfsbane potion exists and they're able to keep their mind during their transformations.
That's very detailed and very sad. But I think it parallels a lot of realities for people and making it difficult for him to find a job, even though he's no harm to anyone. It's proven. He didn't harm anyone while he was the werewolf and out.
Exactly. And he's a very good wizard and a very good teacher. But the fact that parents would know that he's a werewolf means that he would not be able to keep his job.
I think it's crazy that I don't even know if J.K. Rowling intended to do what she did, but how the Harry Potter universe parallels real life so much. It's so incredible detail that I honestly don't know if she's extremely brilliant or extremely lucky. Like, because...
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the thing, and, like, why I created this podcast, you know, geared toward adults who haven't read the books yet, you know, is that one of the reasons why I say, like, you should read it as an adult, even if you didn't get a chance to read it as a child, because it's not a kid's book. There's so many things that will, like, relate to life, you know, at all stages that... you know, you can read it and get a deeper understanding as an adult that you sort of just pass by when you're reading it as a kid.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But the werewolf, so I think this is one of those cases where J.K. Rowling, for the need to talk after she's written the books, like when she compared lycanthropy, am I saying it right?
Mm-hmm.
Being a werewolf basically with, what was it, with AIDS?
I think she has said that it was a metaphor for people who had
read it, just and like let it be, let people read the books, because then you have one good werewolf and all of the other werewolves are dangerous, especially to children, and you have someone like Fenrir Greyback. It's not really being inclusive if you're having who your parallel for gay people or whatever that is, to have one good person, one quiet good person, and then you have dangerous psychos. It's not really what you want to be doing.
Yeah, it seems more like it should be a parallel of someone who, you know, similar to Hermione, where she is extremely qualified, but there are still, you know, systemic injustices and biases that she has to overcome. You know, it's the same thing, I think, with Lupin, where he is more than responsible to take care of being a werewolf. He is an exceptional wizard, and nobody wants to hire him because people just, I guess, inherently don't trust werewolves. You know, that is something, it's who he is. It's not like something that can be cured. And yet, you know, no one but Dumbledore is really giving him a chance to thrive in this society.
Apart from his, you know, transforming once a month, there's nothing else that, like, no other character attributes are there with werewolves
in the book? No.
No. I think it sounds like the werewolves almost parallel people who have felonies. Mm-hmm. There's so many things they can't do once they're out of prison, and at least in the United States. It's almost incredible the rights they don't have. Like, it's very sad.
By the way, for felons, do they even get minimum wage?
Stuff like that, yeah. Well, when they're out in society, yes, they have to have a job. When they're in the actual system, no. They get, like, I think at most, like, $1 or $2 an hour at the most.
Wow. Okay.
And then as a felon, you can't receive financial aid for school. While you're in the system, you can't vote. You can't work in certain places, and people are discriminatory, like, they won't hire you, stuff like that.
Right, so it's almost like they want them to just fail and almost, like, be in that cycle rather than, you know, rise up above something that, you know, they can't change.
Yeah, instead of thinking, like, the werewolf, coming back to Harry Potter, instead of thinking of a way that they could, I mean, you can plan for a full moon. It's not like the moon's hiding when it's going to come out. Just like that one night, just like make sure you watch him. Make sure you, like, I don't know. I don't want to say put him in a box, but yeah, that one night, put him in a box. Don't let him werewolf out on anyone. And then the rest of the 28 days, like, he's fine. Same thing. Like, once someone's a felon, you don't have to treat them like a felon the rest of their life. So let them integrate back in society. It's not like that one crime they did, it's going to define who they are, or at least it shouldn't define who they are.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because Remus takes, I think, his being a werewolf very seriously, and, you know, takes extra precautions, make sure he, you know, has the potion, except for the one night where everything is going on and he forgets to take it. But, you know, I think, you know, like you said, like, he hasn't hurt anybody. He never does, even on the night where he does, like, forget to take his potion the last night, you know?
And that only really happens because he doesn't have room to tell people, like, hey, I'm a werewolf, I have to do this on this night. Like, if everyone around him knew, they'd be like, look, maybe we should pause this fight and get this guy some medicine because he's about to change the party. Like,
right.
Yeah, things would be different. We could be open about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, while he was at Hogwarts, you literally couldn't tell that he was a werewolf the way he was working.
Exactly. And I might be misremembering, but wasn't he, like, expecting not to be able to even go to school because of his condition? He
was to be able to go to school, but Dumbledore became headmaster after Dibbit, and then he was like, I don't see why you can't if we have certain precautions. And that's when they planted the Whomping Willow that took him to the Shrieking Shack.
Yeah, so it's almost like you need more people like Dumbledore, who's like, okay, I understand that there's this thing that you can't change, but we're going to work with you in order to have certain precautions and have systems in place that are going to not just keep you safe, but others safe, and give you an opportunity to learn and, like, better your future.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's nice to like characters like Dumbledore exist, because Dumbledore obviously is not a perfect person. He's a flawed character, as we've all learned. But I like that he's flawed. That gives him room to look past other people's flaws. Mm-hmm. It's why he has an intimate relationship. And I think intimate like a brother relationship with Snape. They're obviously very close. If on the night that Voldemort took over, Snape went to him crying. There's like to think that he has bonds like that, or the fact that he hired Lupin to teach knowing he's a werewolf. Like, he keeps and hoards secrets. Mm-hmm. And for the greater good. He's helping people and helping them basically not have their lives taken away from them.
You know, apart from like putting students near three-headed dogs and stuff like that.
Right.
Is essentially, I guess, what a teacher is supposed to be.
I totally forgot about that. Afterwards. That's right. It's true. Does get Harry into a lot of danger.
I know. Well, that's a whole other topic to talk about, you know, Dumbledore's responsibility around kids. But I think we can agree for the most part that Dumbledore does, you know, go out of his way to advocate for people and, you know, allow for people to change and also to allow people to grow in certain ways that's going to like better themselves in the long run.
Yeah, he's definitely understanding.
So the next thing I have is about the judicial system in the Wizarding World and Azkaban. So we see Sirius Black imprisoned for 12 years for a crime that he did not commit. We see the minister put Hagrid in Azkaban just because when the Chamber of Secrets gets opened again, because they don't know what else to do. I'm doubting Hagrid had a real trial that second time around. They just throw him in there and then, like, it's like, oh, if he's innocent, we'll just return him. It's fine. And it's like, Azkaban isn't a place you can just, like, casually go. Like, they use Dementors in this place. These are creatures that feed off of your soul and your happiness. Like, you can't just throw someone in there just casually and expect that, oh, if this person's innocent, we'll just let them go and then everything's going to be fine. Like, obviously, it's going to have an impact on their well-being and their mental health. And we also have pensives in this world that literally store people's memories. And we don't seem to use them in trials. You know, otherwise, we would have known that Sirius was innocent. We would have known Hagrid was innocent. We would have known that Harry was completely justified in using the Patronus charm at the beginning of book 5. You know, and especially with Hagrid, it's like we have Hagrid who like is trouble and like breaks the rules all the time. It's his word against Tom Riddle's, who's charming, a good student, who's well-behaved. He's a prefect. Hagrid just didn't even have a chance, really, if it's just one person's word against his. When it comes to him being like expelled from Hogwarts for the opening the Chamber of Secrets, which he didn't do.
So for the justice system, it's interesting because the way you describe it, them being thrown into Azkaban and like, oh, it's just fine. And so they're innocent. They'll be fine. Like, it's like so casual approach to the justice system, because that's what happens. And the fact that Hagrid, you're right, he didn't have a chance against Tom Riddle. Hagrid is, there's a term for him, and it's not a good one. He's like part giant, but he's like a shameful thing, because I guess it's just not cool not to be a wizard in that world. So it's very sad, because it is just his word against Tom Riddle's. And if had they believed Hagrid, like maybe Tom Riddle would have turned out a little better.
It just seems crazy. Like, I just want to know, like, what, like, the only trial we really see in this book, besides like memories, is like in person with Harry in book 5. And it just seems like it's the kind of situation where it's like, I don't believe you because I don't want to believe you. And like, I don't even care what evidence you bring into this, because you shouldn't have been doing magic. Dementors could not have been in, you know, in your neighborhood, and we're gonna try to go out of our way to discredit you and like expel you. It's not until Dumbledore like shows up where Harry sort of has a chance. You know, they don't even let him defend himself and explain the situation, and they don't ask like, okay, if this is true, let's see your memory of it.
That's true. It would have been simple.
Yeah, no, generally they should have pensieves. More for the Sirius Black case that you were talking about, I don't know if it would have worked because as far as everyone was concerned, he was Voldemort's number two. And we know that, like, Slughorn might have done a poor job on it, but his memory was tampered with. And Morfin Gaunt got a memory implanted in his brain. So I don't know if they would have believed, like, Sirius Black's memories about it. So for his specific case, I can't say. For the Harry case, well, honestly, it was just they have way too much leeway. Fudge or whoever it is has way too much leeway to abuse the system however you want.
I also think it's parallel to, like, real life. We could have solid proof of things happening and still not good enough for someone to be believed. So even when pulling someone's memory.
You know about that? Dementors couldn't have been in Little Winging. A cop wouldn't have shot you if you were guilty. If you weren't guilty. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Parallels that people just assume because, like, what were you doing? That's the first question. Like, what were you doing? Sometimes I was just doing what I was supposed to. Harry was doing the right thing. Right. I'm serious, telling the truth. He spent 12 years in a terrible place because somebody else lied. And on top of that, when he gets out, he's on the run. He's never actually, his name is tarnished. He's never proven innocent. And the only person who knows the truth is, I think, Harry.
Right, Harry and Remus and, like, Dumbledore.
And that's his life itself, like, it's ruined. And his reputation is ruined. Like, that's, his family name is just this horrible person.
Yeah, and that's what's so tragic about it. It's almost like, even if you are innocent, if you were arrested, like, it's hard for people to, like, sort of get that out of their head of, like, oh, you were arrested, so you must be guilty. And that's not what happens all the time.
Or at least partially guilty.
Yeah, they have partial guilt. Like, they're somehow, you were responsible for being at the wrong place at the wrong time. But it's like, no, I really was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right. It's definitely putting blame on the victim of the situation, for sure.
With Azkaban, something that struck me as weird was the fact that they talk about how Sirius didn't go crazy in there, or whatever, the Dementors had no effect on him. Why? Because he didn't commit the crime, so he could take no joy from his crime, so they couldn't do anything to him because he had no joy. And okay, fine, I get it. But was he literally... So either the judicial system is much better than what we think it is, or, like, how is he the only person who wasn't affected by the Dementors? So I don't know.
It's a good question. I think, you know, we see a lot of very violent people in prison in Azkaban, but we don't really hear about anything for, like, less violent or less important, you know, crimes, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we really don't know, is it just Azkaban and regardless of the crime, this is where you're thrown into? Or is there, like, another sort of institution for people who have nonviolent crimes?
Oh, good question. I'm guessing it's just Azkaban, that all crimes are looked at the same. Morally wrong is morally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, especially if you're going to put someone in a place like that, like, I think you would want to make sure that you were correct in your conviction.
In theory, yeah.
Right. In theory, morally, yes.
But it doesn't happen. I think more often people want justice served, even if it's not necessarily real. I have to feel like I'm being compensated for. I have to feel like the system is working. I have to feel like this person is being punished, even though the right person isn't being punished.
Which is the exact opposite of what the law says. Like, the spirit of the law in just about any country is, if you're guilty and you're let off, right, you're not charged, that's still better than if you were innocent and you were charged. You'd rather have a guilty person walk than an innocent person hang.
Yeah.
In practice, in a lot of countries, it's the exact opposite.
Right. And I think, you know, it's supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. But I think we see the majority of the time, it's you're guilty, prove to me that you're innocent.
Yeah. You're guilty, prove to me that you're innocent.
So I think these are all really good examples of where we see injustice and racism within the Harry Potter series. And I think this whole, you know, book series is about Harry pushing back against this institution and this group and this villain that are determined to point the finger at people and be like, you are lesser than, so you are not worthy to have a position in this world that grants you real rights or freedom. And I think it's not just other wizards, you know, we see it with other magical creatures in general, you know. And I think we can take these topics and look at them and relate to them, you know, as we have to the situation that's going on in our country, you know. And I think you can argue all over the world where there is a systemic problem that many countries have, where people are being unfairly affected. And it's this ingrained of, I am better than, and you are lesser than. And we're seeing the real effects of that. And I think now is the time to have those important discussions and to really call out certain behavior. And I think if someone has a kid that really loves these books, or friends or family members that really love these books but aren't making that connection to what's going on right now, this is like a really good tool to sort of lead into those conversations.
Yeah, I actually, maybe because I enjoy history and politics anyways, but it always annoys me when people do what you're saying, but if that's the only way that it's going to get through to them, then like, I guess so. Like, a lot of, I know the films were weird, but the Hunger Games books identified a lot of problematic issues. With Harry Potter specifically, I did say what my issue was with Harry, that he doesn't actually care about the injustice unless like it affects him. But yeah, there's Harry Potter. There was even, what is that, Percy Jackson?
Mm-hmm. I haven't
read those, but
yeah.
You read a bit of them, but not much, yeah. But like, so if that's the only way that someone's going to understand, then of course it's very good. Like, you sit them down, you teach them that, look at this, you were supporting this person here. Why were you supporting it? This is what's right. This is what's wrong. Definitely. Yeah.
I actually think the reason you dislike Harry is the reason why I do like his character. I like that he is only helpful because he has to be, because that's the moral stance of a lot of people, especially in the United States. I feel like, to me, Ron is the only one that's really exempt from that, because Ron really had nothing to lose. Harry had no choice but to fight, because Voldemort was going to kill him. So Harry kind of was invested in his own life. So, sorry, Harry, you gotta fight. Hermione, same thing, like, invested because Voldemort is trying to kill her. Like, you're a mudblood, you have to fight. Ron, pure blood, you don't have to do anything. You could actually just sit this one out. You know, consequences to your actions. All you have to do is join the other side.
Right.
But instead, he stays and he chooses to fight. But I think most people are in the category of Harry. I'm only fighting now because I have to, because I'm uncomfortable and I have no choice. Harry's forced to fight, but I think that's most people's stance. We're only forced to fight because we're forced to fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. And I think, you know, when you were listing, you know, Hunger Games and Percy Jackson and Harry Potter, and I know Zach wanted to come on here to talk about Star Wars as well.
Ooh.
I think that's the way in for a lot of people. I think that's almost the role of the arts, you know, is to reflect things back onto, you know, ourselves, so we can learn more and see these situations and understand them in a different context, even if it's covered by, you know, fantasy and magic and, you know, outer space or whatever it is. You know, I think those same themes are inherently present in all of those genres, but it's also something that we can all relate to on different levels.
Definitely. Harry Potter encompasses most series that are written this well, are done this well, encompass a lot of things we find in our own lives. I think I think using Harry Potter to talk to people about a very uncomfortable topic is smart, because I'm not going to lie, I only came on the show to talk about race because it was Harry Potter. Because usually I don't have these conversations with people casually, and I sure don't have them with strangers, because you really don't know what you're walking into. My assumption was that the conversation would be fine, that you guys would have similar beliefs, even if we disagree about the Harry Potter stuff, like, we're still morally on the same page. And so far, it seems like that part's fine. But still, it's a scary thing to walk into.
Mm. Yeah, and I absolutely appreciate you both coming on to have this discussion with me, because this is not a discussion that I can have on my own. You know, I know where, you know, my morals are, but I think, you know, it's not my lived experience that matters here. You know, it's not my voice that matters here, you know, and I think we can all come together to have this discussion and learn from each other through something that we all mutually love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's to me very brilliant, smart to try to connect it to everything that's going on. And naturally, honestly, it does, because Harry Potter is so encompassing and very layered. From the start of the book is very, not nearly as heavy and not nearly as intense as we get towards the end of the series. I think the tone changes when they kill off Sirius Black. Sorry, guys, spoiler. when they kill off Sirius Black, that's when things take a dark turn, because that's when Harry loses someone. And the whole, like, ending, when you just think, like, this is it, he's going to get away from the Dursleys, he's going to escape this, like, no, this is it. This is tonight. This man is past, he is dead, and sometimes life just doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that really flipped the books and Harry's character in a good way.
If Harry could have just opened that mirror, he would have realized he could have contacted Sirius in any way he wanted. And none of that would have had to happen. That part sucked.
I know.
The Sirius was actually, more sad, I think.
Yeah. Especially because at the end, she really has all that hope. Like, she, like, builds it up, like, maybe he'll come back as a ghost. Maybe somehow some miracle will happen. Like, he himself has a horror crook. I don't know. But nope, never comes to light. He's just passed, and he has to go back to living with the Dursleys.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's very tragic. And so one more thing I want to bring up is J.K. Rowling's recent tweets and her essay that she wrote today. And so it is very evident that there is a big disconnect between J.K. Rowling and this series that she has wrote and there, or she has written, sorry. And there is a big disconnect between the Harry Potter community and J.K. Rowling. So it's like, how do we reckon with having this thing that we love so much and knowing that the creator of it holds these views and invalidates her own fans' identities? You know, I think I would say that there's definitely a death of the author situation in this, you know, but I think a lot of people are struggling right now to be a Harry Potter fan when J.K. Rowling is saying the things that she is saying.
I think J.K. Rowling falls in the same category as, like, not nearly as bad, I'm going to say that right now, not remotely as bad as, like, a Harvey Weinstein or a Bill Cosby, but Michael Jackson, figures who are huge in the culture they influence, that they're so big that you really can't take them out. You can't take Michael Jackson out of pop music and expect to have a lot of pop music left. If you take him out of the culture, you're taking out a lot of influence. Same thing with Harvey Weinstein. Yes, you can remove the man from the franchise, but the Weinstein Company, he does a lot of films. You're going to just ignore everything Weinstein has touched because you're going to be ignoring a majority of the film industry. Same thing with J.K. Rowling. I think let's separate the author from the series, because Harry Potter is far too big and far too large to go away. And unfortunately, J.K. Rowling has established Harry Potter and influences, like, different books, different languages. I mean, we're in two different countries, Canada, United States, and Harry Potter didn't even originate here. It comes from the UK. Like, that's how big it is. So I think people should be comfortable with enjoying the series still and separating the author from it. Because I don't know who J.K. Rowling was when she wrote the series, but the woman who's tweeting today is a different human being. I it's really devastating to see it, because I'm like, man, you did write this awesome series and you did write this amazing world and you did let us, for me personally, to cancel Harry Potter is like canceling my childhood, and I'm just like, I'm not ready to do that. And it sucks because the thing she's saying, to be honest, like, I come from a position of privilege, because she's not talking about me in the sense that I'm not a trans woman. And she is talking about the trans community in horrible, horrible ways. The things I couldn't even get through her essay. I was like, this lady is saying things that literally do not make sense in reality. I was like, girl, like, you need to come back to planet Earth, because that's the language we need to speak. So what she's saying is horrible, but I think I'm ready to cancel J.K. Rowling and just, like, Harry Potter is written by a ghost. Like, Harry Potter has no author. Like, J.K. Rowling, we will move on this franchise without you. We do not need you. You actually wrote this series so wonderfully that we have enough details that we can fill them in without you. So that's where I'm at with J.K. Rowling.
For me, I had always known her views. Like, I think she hasn't been as overt about it before, but at least I was aware of them anyways. The thing is that, firstly, one thing that I'd like to say is, all three of us, we are west of the Atlantic right now. So east, and more than England, Europe, mainland Europe, has more issues or is less accepting of trans people, especially mainland Europe, but also England. So Rowling's views are not as out of place on that side of the Atlantic. That's one thing. Another thing is that it'll depend on how people react. I'll give you two examples of people. One was, there was a band, Headley, which was okay, like I could listen to it. And when all of the sexual assault allegations and all of that started up, like, I wanted to separate the artist from the music, but I just couldn't. I can't listen to Headley now. While at the same time, Pablo Neruda has admitted to raping a woman, but I'm like, I can still read his poetry. So I don't know how people are going to react on that, this, but it's going to go one way or the other. How far can you or should you separate the artist from their work? And apart from that, I know a lot of people are able to separate it where they want to. So I don't know. Those are the three things that I was thought mattered here.
I do think J.K. Rowling has had some problematic, like, issues for a while now. Like, this latest thing is obviously terrible, but it's not so far-fetched from her previous statements.
It's one of many.
Yeah. She says things all the time.
And I think that, you know, because the Harry Potter community is so separate from J.K. Rowling, especially now, it's like, she has written this book that is all about standing up to injustice and calling out injustice and discrimination when you see it, that this community is not afraid to be like, J.K. Rowling, that's fucked up. You are invalidating your own fans' identities. You are hurting people. But not only that, but Harry Potter fans are also like, let me give you the resources as to why you are wrong so you can educate yourself. And I think that separation between J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter is possible because the community is so determined to make it a welcome and safe space for everybody. And I think that remaining a fan of Harry Potter is like the biggest revolt that you can have, where you're like, your views are not going to ruin this thing that I love. And I am not letting your views seep into this fandom. This fandom is going to remain a safe place for everybody because that is what Harry Potter is about.
Yeah, I think it's a time important that we, for lack of a better word, protect Harry Potter. Because if not, we're going to lose it to the author that wrote it. So I agree with that we need to stay in the fandom, stay connected, because we are big enough and built enough to, like, we don't stand for those values, that we are welcoming and everyone's included, and everything she's writing, like, no, we do not agree with what she's saying. Is absolutely horrible. Like, I want to emphasize to people, like, also what she's saying, it was hard to get through because to me, like, it was not rooted in reality. I was like, you're making things up in your mind.
Yeah, a lot of it was factually inaccurate.
Yeah, no, Rowling, the thing is, okay, she doesn't, I think, as far as I know, she doesn't have an issue with you being gay, lesbian, or bi, right? And the problem is that when you read Harry Potter, you see a boy who, until the age of 11, was shut up or pushed aside or whatever, right? However he was supposed to be treated. And then he finally finds a place where he belongs or where he can. And that, for all queer people, I think, that is something that they could relate to so heavily. And I know that she doesn't have an issue with the gay, lesbian, or bi, but it's pretty sad that, like, I'm sure there's a lot of trans people who could at least see a little bit of their experience in Harry Potter. So it's really sad that, meaning you'd have to get into all of that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Harry, that's totally right, that Harry does find a place, like a whole other world where he is accepted, and finds friends and a sense of belonging. And I think a lot of people found that through Harry Potter, you know. And, like, I know, like, my closest friends are Harry Potter fans. You know, I can say for a fact that when I walked into LeakyCon last October, I felt so at home among, like, thousands of people that I didn't know, because I knew that they cared about Harry Potter as much as I did. So I think Harry Potter has been that safe place for people, and I'm hoping that fans continue to stay in order to maintain it as a safe place for everybody.
I hope so, too. Definitely hope that.
Well, thank you guys for joining me on this discussion.
Thank you for having us. This is very pleasant. It was nice to be able to talk about race and issues and obviously Harry Potter.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you guys for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic, so please feel free to reach out to us on Instagram or Twitter at firstyearspod, or as always, email us at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. Our next episode will be starting Prisoner of Azkaban, so please read chapters 1-4 of that, and we will see you guys next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources for our episodes can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier.